episode 45 Underground Espionage. Tara, thank you for opening your drink.
I waited to crack that kombucha until you were doing a little intro. I just thought you might want like some accompanying sound.
I would never want anything to go too smoothly right off the bat. Is that you're good, you're refreshed, you're hydrating, Tara?
Yeah, I'm hydrating. It's important to stay hydrated, people.
Yeah, I mean, look, it is. Ooh. Oh, you're good. Everything getting adjusted there? Yeah. We'll see. We'll see how it goes throughout the episode. Well, man, the interview with Ross was so great last week, wasn't it?
Oh, it was amazing. I could talk to him for hours. Obviously. It was really hard to stop. Even after we hit stop recording.
Probably like another half hour.
I was having a panic attack because I was worried that the interview wouldn't save and then that we'd go stall out. I'm so paranoid about that type of shit.
When we don't have Gray by our side, God. We are so technically challenged that we get nervous anytime we do anything like that, thinking it's not going to save.
Yeah, I mean, I just get downright superstitious about things. Yeah. So definitely I was enjoying talking to him, but I was also like, oh my God, holy shit, I hope that this temp file can handle us.
But definitely expect more with Ross. It's so great talking about the recent Saturn's Core releases, so mm-hmm. it'd be a lot of fun to do that. Every so often to go over the new releases, you know. Actually, there'll be one this weekend, so excited for that.
And I've been thinking about Joe Christ a lot too.
That really recommend picking that up. It's a great set, and just like we said in the episode, a great look at that era of the 90s. Just
Freaks and Creeps of the 90s. Like it brought me back to a time where it's easy for it to slip out of your mind how much that was kind of when everybody was so experimental, right?
It truly felt transgressive.
Yeah, it was like when punk was still on, you know what, no, you never know. Like you had the cat lady, you had people dressing up in different shapes and forms, and it hadn't really taken on its true form that manifested itself in society. That's what the 90s were like.
But also even stuff like industrial, when we were growing up, the age we were when that stuff was coming out, or stuff like Answer Me.
Yes.
It was, you know, stuff I knew about it and I was like searching for, but I didn't fully know it.
Yeah.
And even stuff like Throbbing Gristle was just learning that through the stuff that was major and huge at the time. Stuff like Nine Inch Nails, where he would shout out Throbbing Gristle and Coil and Henry Rollins having the Neubauten tattoo. Mm-hmm. Like that sort of stuff is what led 13-year-olds like ourselves to discover the more underground stuff, the stuff that came before it.
Looking for challenging things, looking for naughty things, looking for extreme things that we may or may not fully agree with, but we wanted to see what it felt like.
And the also still difficulty of finding that stuff.
Yeah.
Especially in the suburbs 100%. In the early 90s. I know the name Throbbing Gristle, but how do I even go about finding a CD?
The weird record store that would carry it, finding the alt bookstores.
And especially that era when stuff was in and out of print and you couldn't get it so easily. Yeah. So it's an exciting time. And I think the Joe Christ, Red Spirit Lake is in that 100%. World, you know? So yeah, just really exciting. And I do want to welcome any new listeners, because I know we did get a lot of new listeners from that episode. People have been writing me saying that, you know, just discovered the podcast through Ross's episode. So welcome all new listeners.
Welcome. Thank you. Sorry.
Yes. And so just in case this is your second episode, just a heads up about how things go here when it's not an interview. Look, it's going to be chaotic. It's me and Tara's life. Each week, the chaos, the madness of our life, we're going to be talking over each other. We're going to say things incorrectly. I'm going to mispronounce lots of words.
Well, the things that we say incorrectly are mostly, you know, things that we articulating, like enunciations and such.
I am going to hyperbolically, say that I hate something and then episodes later, reverse that.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of that. Mm-hmm. When we talk about movies and when we talk about, you know, directors and stuff, we're not the total scholarly experts. There's other podcasts that are going to do that. We do our research and we love this stuff. This stuff is our life, but we are definitely coming at this stuff from more of a visceral standpoint and how it fits into our week.
A fan point.
Exactly. Yeah. And we're going to go all over the place. Obviously,
we might get hungry and discuss a snack.
We're going to be fighting a hangover, dodging hangovers, preparing for the next hangover. Of course, this month we have been doing
Shut up. Don't you dare. How dare you? Don't do it. Don't say it.
I'm not even going to say it. Screw
don't
it.
Say.
But is so it dry? It's been less of a hangover episodes, and I'm sure that
it's more of a hydrating.
I'm sure of our listeners who don't indulge in those sort of things. You're like, yeah, guys, why don't you just continue that? Well, we'll see.
We might get everybody.
I'm gonna keep it going for a little bit.
I know you are. You're so proud of yourself, and look, that's fine. Like, we all need a reset sometimes. You know what I mean? Yeah. But I also need a glass of wine sometimes. Mike, have I been building up? I'm a GD sommelier.
Level one,
but that's okay. It's like, should I waste that skill that I have?
I have been.
And just never drink wine again? No, that would be stupid.
I have been craving a martini and a steak sandwich from the smokehouse. That will be my first.
That is that caloric, will be sir.
The indulgence
that
back.
That is quite indulgent.
That will be
that's
the
like
indulgence
good,
back.
That's a good 2 G's that will a cow.
Hey.
I just want a glass.
Take it down.
I just want a glass of Koji rum.
And of course, some Mai Tais and some great tiki drinks. But look, we'll be back.
I just want a glass
listeners,
of Koji
we
rum.
Will be back being hungover, dodging and avoiding
some
hangovers. But, you know, the stuff we focus on here. And again, it just so happens that it's become each episode is generally around a movie or a couple movies. But hey, we might do an episode on a band. We might do an episode on, you know, generally we do. Shot on video, a lot of porn, a lot of off the beaten path movies, a lot of exploitation like Russ Meyer.
Yeah.
But hey, we also love, you know, we've been talking about doing an episode about a 30s Busby Berkeley musical. These things. So generally
we love
it's
noir.
As we say this, it's
yeah,
it's
might
what
happen.
We want it to be every week. It's what yeah. we choose it to be every week.
We should discuss Barbara Stanwyck.
Exactly. God, so look, I'm so just much. Saying I'm just giving a heads up for all new listeners from last week, a disclaimer, if you will. And guess what? I hate disclaimers.
Oh,
so
my
I'm doing
God.
Everything
you are doing
I
everything
hate.
You hate. I was not anticipating this happening. I'm actually quite thrilled.
We
look
also
at you.
Don't really
You're
discuss how, what we're going to talk about until we hit record. So things like this happen. Things wrenches get thrown. These things happen. So welcome, everybody. And if you are interested in the sonic side of our things, of course, we have our Noise Extra podcast that is 6 years plus of episodes to go check out. Wherever you're listening to this, it's going to be over yeah. there.
Now, Mike, speaking of that, Hum is the brand of kombucha that I am having now. And guess what? The thing that I'm excited about in the news this week is there's a new Hum in town. And you can hear it in Long Island. And it is unknown where this Hum is originating. But the Hum has gotten so bad that government agencies are now trying to seek the source of the Hum of
you
Long Island.
You sure it's
Island
not just
sound.
Like Lucerio working on a new album?
It's probably Lucerio working on a new album. And he has, you know, he just let the synth roll, went off somewhere else and just kept it going. It's reverberating over the sound. But I do love Oceanic Hums, Unexplained Sounds. You can look, there's unexplained sounds all over the world that have been explained by natural and unnatural phenomena. In this type of area, it's generally some sort of factory. However, I can't wait until they get to the bottom of what this Hum is, because people say that it's excruciating. They've had to move. All they do is hear a constant hum in their head, and it's maddening. It's a really, really low vibrational frequency. But just picture that. You're in your home, and you start, to, much like when we start to hear the cacophony that is Hollywood, when we hear the the roar of a roll by when people are on their motorcycles, or the omnipresent pounding in the apartment below us as they remodel something.
Yeah, it
like,
is.
Like, what if it never stopped? The leaf blowers. Of the California leaf blowers that happen every Monday morning at 7 a.m.
Yeah, we basically.
And then everyone's like, those are illegal. And I'm like, that doesn't stop anyone.
It stops nobody. Yeah, we've had, we basically had Neubauten performances under us for the past two or three weeks. They have stopped knock on something because it has stopped.
Yeah, they hammered every surface and now it's good to go. But then, but you have a home, you own your home, you're living there, and then all of a sudden, like, the hum begins. It's like, how long do you wait? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
How long do you endure it, hoping it will end? Like, what are the parameters of the torture that you allow yourself to experience before you move? And how do you even sell your home? Like, or let's say you rent, or let's say you sell your home. Like, people come over, can they hear it? Are they just like constantly like, oh, I love this place? And it's like,
yeah, no, it's insane.
And they're like, oh, that maybe that goes away. Maybe it
doesn't.
I mean,
it could also be like a, what our neighbors hear from us, you know, when we have stuff going on. Who knows?
No, they hear more yammering, laughing, screaming along
cackling.
The songs, cackling.
Tomorrow morning, they're going to be hear us cheering for the Royal Rumble.
I can't wait for the Royal
Rumble. In the morning, by the way.
I'm so sad. Yeah. I'm so, okay, I'm very excited about the Royal Rumble. I have had this plan that I did not discuss with you, Mike.
You had mentioned it.
But I didn't, okay. The
I
Royal
didn't know it was
going
to be with the Rumble.
Though. It's on the 31st. I wanted to have a glass of wine at the end of January. I'm not saying I'm going to, like, you know, go nuts. I'm not going to, like, you know, channel the spirit of Bacchus and, like, you know, or go into a Dionysian frenzy or anything. I just want to have a glass of wine.
Sounds all right to me,
and I was like, glass of wine, glass of wine, watch wrestling. This sounds awesome. 11 a.m., even better. This will be hilarious. And then I find out that it's on the 31st, not the 1st. So now I'm like, shit. Does that make me a quitter?
I mean, look, again, it's...
But I feel like I can offset it, just like I won't do it on the 1st, but I want to watch the Rumble and have a glass
of wine. We'll sort it out. Look.
I could kayfabe myself in the fucking kombucha.
Some deals are already in the works being made.
Shove a kombucha up your ass.
Maybe some more deals can be made. we'll just have to see.
Well, I just don't want you to...
I don't judge you.
I don't care if you judge me. I just don't want you to lose respect for me that I can't gain back. So,
I will not do that, Tara. We'll see.
I don't want to lose my good boy points. So
we'll see
we
what happens. Very excited to talk about Ghost Keeper today. That is the main feature of
Speaking
today.
Speaking of omnipresent madness.
Absolutely. And we wanted to do something for our snowed in and freezing friends out there. And this is one of our favorite movies. But before we get into that, do want to talk about been listening to a lot of great stuff this week, so thought we'd give some shout outs to some listening.
Some stuff.
The new Christian Olsen tape, and let's see if I even
it's quite handsome as
attempt
well.
Attempt to pronounce it.
Please do.
Molna e Mol. I think that's okay. Swedish term.
Yeah.
Of course, Christian. Fantastic artist, fantastic author. If you go back all the way to, I believe, episode 5 or so, we did an episode about Haxan that was inspired by the chapter in his Gift Nolan book, Christian's book.
I've been wanting to watch Haxan again.
Great movie, great so movie good. Around this time. And this new solo tape is really incredible on Hospital. I don't know if the tape itself is still available, but you can certainly check it out on the Bandcamp. Just really incredible atmosphere, perfect for this time of year, perfect for something like Ghost Keeper. One of those that you can just let go, you know, if your tape does the thing where it just keeps flipping the sides. I think we did it like 3 times before I even realized, like, oh, we've listened to this 3 times because it's just that good. Really incredible.
Yeah.
Was just listening to a new tape by Il Voce, and a great project as well.
Il Voce
got a package that featured a 12-inch lathe cut as well as a tape. We had put the tape on first. That was great, right?
Yeah, it was great.
We were just...
No arguments here.
I didn't think you were. Another great ambient...
I've been maligned. I wasn't arguing.
I didn't think you were a great ambient tape. And then been in like a death rock zone. Listen to that Corpus Delicti, that album from like 95, like Ton, right? Been.
Yes, yes.
Give me the power.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds great, but during the darkness and like, although we are not cold.
We don't believe the world revolves around us. We know many of our listeners have been stranded in snow. I think I have heard that they appreciated a nice 2-hour interview while they were stuck inside.
Do you know what I've been doing in honor of the ice and snow everywhere? Is I've been drinking hot cocoa every night, and I love hot cocoa so much. It's all I want to drink.
You make a wonderful cup, and even when it's low sugar, low calorie.
Oh, god damn it. That's right. I do take the unsweetened vanilla almond milk with the monk fruit sweetener and the cocoa my own locale.
God.
I dilute the shit out of it.
I hate us.
I can't believe you brought this up. I was not going to let spill them beans. I was going to keep them beans in the bag. But
we're on the other side of it. We've been doing it long enough that I'm like, the end is near, so I feel that it's okay, but look, I hate us. Do not do the things we talk about.
I'll talk about it all day long. I love that shit.
I'm so sick of talking about it. I hate myself. I regret everything I've said up to this point.
Oh, good. Well, maybe
it's a good thing we record ourselves talking, because God, I am filled with regret.
I love when you shock me. You're shocking. You're shocking. Yeah. Well, let's discuss Ghost Keeper, because it is such a perfect winter watch, especially if it's late at night or if you know you're not going anywhere. Ghost Keeper brings that isolated, introspective verge of madness feeling that is so appropriate for this time.
I mean, it's always been a favorite here from the old Code Red DVD with that beat up print to now this incredibly
beautiful
restoration that just came out. And it was one we just knew we had to get immediately. And it is one that it does seem like it's starting to get its due more and more. Because even when we started really loving this movie, getting that Code Red DVD long time ago, it was one we'd recommend and people were just sort of half-ish into it. Oh, yeah, one, you know, it's kind of slow. It's okay. I always felt that we liked it more than other people liked it, you know? Yeah. And I feel like now it's starting to really get its due and really becoming one of those winter movies that people are going to return to. And I think this Blu-ray is going to make it solidify that, because it just looks so incredible. And it is one, when I mention it to people, I preface it with saying how slow it is.
It's not slow.
I would say on this week, and I've actually watched it twice this week.
Yeah.
I did not find it slow at all.
I think I am on the edge of my seat for the entire watch.
Yeah.
Like, truly, even though I know the mystery that is going to unfold before me, I'm still riveted by watching it unfold. Like, I truly think that it is a very suspenseful film.
I agree. And I thought maybe it's because we know what's happening that we felt that I don't know what it is, but I will say, Tara, on this week's watching of this, I was more into it than ever, better than ever. One of those, you know, which is always great. Mm-hmm. Every time you watch it, you like it more. And I really erase my stance that it is an incredibly slow
movie. Exciting decisions, an exciting plot. I like the choices that were made.
I mean, it is,
this limited budget, I think it's really, really well done.
Yeah, so it was made during the era of the Canadian tax shelter movies, and that is when Canada was offering 100% deductible on money spent on making a film. Rituals is another classic that was made during this time.
And my God, Rituals is good.
We'll certainly do an episode on Rituals.
Oh, we really should. That's an adult movie for adults.
And I would say Ghost Keeper is as well. And so, that great feeling of lost in the winter Canadian forest is what this movie is dripping with.
Mm-hmm.
This Blu-ray has a lot of great extras. In fact, it has commentary by our buddies. The Hysteria Continues.
I made
sure to not watch it with their commentary before recording this, just so we don't ape their thoughts. We'll certainly watch it after we record this episode. But obviously, we love them. We had Justin on last year as an interviewer. I actually believe it was our first interview in Underground Espionage. And
his buttery and dulcet tones.
He's so great. And I was on the Drunk Cast doing commentary for Fatal Frames. So if you want to hear/see me in state.
Oh, Lord.
You can do that. So the movie is truly a winter, freezing, scary. I mean, I don't know if scary is the word. More haunting.
It's haunting.
I don't know if movies can even be scary anymore.
They can be suspenseful. But haunting, here's the thing. It's one of those situations that we discuss frequently, Mike, and that is that this is a situation we would not enter because we are not going to... We probably won't be at a ski lodge. It could happen. I've been to them, but I don't see that happening. But certainly, if we're at a ski lodge, we're not going to leave the coziness and warmth of that ski lodge to go exploring on our ski-doos on New Year's Eve to find adventure out in the frozen wilderness. No, thank you. Yeah. It won't happen.
Will not. This is not something that we would also not go into a building that seems abandoned and just make ourselves at home.
They go out on their ski-doos. They go adventuring. They bring, looks like from my perspective, no snacks, no hydration, except for one bottle of Bordeaux. Bottle of wine and no water bottle, nothing else?
Not going to happen.
Never going to happen. Like that is like, you know, you're like, Tara, I thought you loved wine. But yeah, but that's not like... You know, something I'm going to run around on a ski-doo sipping. It's wild. So again, it's one of those situations that most rational people are not going to enter. However, it is the type of situation where you have the rampant hubris of adventurers. You have a kind of the era... Would you say yuppie, my kind of a overly confident man?
The guy, yeah, Marty.
Who is... instantly dislikable, and his confidence makes him dislikable. His sweet girlfriend Jenny, who is gorgeous and reasonable, who disagrees with all of his decisions, and rightly so. And then kind of the tag along Chrissy, who really wants to bang Jenny's boyfriend. So instantly we have one person that we like and two people who are sus. And, you know, I would say that carries through the entire film of driving you forward and how are they going to put themselves in imminent danger out here in the wilderness.
Yeah, when we meet Marty and Jenny, they're coming onto the Totem Shop, a small shop in the isolated area. And immediately Marty's just, you know, being condescending towards the rural folk, the owner. This
urban supremacy attitude that everybody hates.
Yeah, and so right away we're shown, okay, this guy is going to be a tough customer. Jenny's obviously a little more understanding. Then Chrissy rolls up, and they'd all left the lodge that they had been at for New Year's Eve. We find out it's New Year's Eve a little bit later. And even our shop owner says, you know, careful out there. There's worse things out there than getting lost.
Exactly.
You know, and these mountains are, you know, they're not, this is not for just anybody.
I have a really stupid question. What propels a ski-doo? Like, does it have a rudder that's ruddery? Like, does it have a motor that's spinning in the snow to propel it forward?
Don't know.
I have no idea.
Don't care.
I don't know. Is it like, I guess in my mind, I was thinking it's like a jetpack where it's like, and the wind is blowing it forward.
Sure. No one
can know. I've never really thought about these things.
No one
can know. I
know
how the ones on the water work, but I don't know how the snow ones work. That was a dumb question. But you know what? I have a feeling nobody else knows either, so that's all right.
And you know what? We don't need to know, so don't feel the need to.
Who cares? I bet Jenny knows.
But they leave. They don't heed the warning of the shopkeeper, and they come upon a sign that says, "Private property, keep out." Tara, what would we do in this situation?
We would certainly keep out. We'd be like, okay, no go. Actually, we would have already turned around. We would have been like, holy shit, we went to the Totem Lodge. It was so cool. Let's go back to the other place.
If for whatever reason we made it that far.
Yeah.
In this bizarro world that would not be our world.
I would have been like, look at this weird candy they have. I would buy that or a beverage, maybe a bunch of snacks. I'd be like, oh, for some dumb reason, I only brought one bottle of wine and nothing else with me. I'm going to get some supplies and then we can drive on back. So then that would have been the end of our adventure. But as you frequently say, Mike, if people didn't make bad decisions, we wouldn't have a lot of film. So here we are with our group. Defying the weather, defying the warnings, and coming up to the Deer Lodge that's seemingly abandoned.
How incredible does this Deer Lodge look? Just that first shot of it in the snow.
Again, you think of The Shining. You think of other like isolated.
You know what I think of? What? Actually, because there's another shot where it comes sort of at an angle and it looks very big and imposing. It's like the cover of and the building in Last House on Dead End Street. Just that imposing building.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
It made me think of that. But it just immediately, and just Deer Lodge, right? It's just, man, already I'm just in. I'm loving it.
Yeah, so our crew decides, you know, maybe the weather, maybe that guy that we were shitting on back at the cool totem shop was right, and the weather is too poor to go back. And also, Chrissy somehow wrecked her little ski-doo on a rock or something, and it won't go forward. Probably supernatural means, don't you think, Mike?
I mean, you
maybe
know,
it was
that's
a rock.
The thing.
Who knows? I don't know how they go. And so then, what do they have to do? They have to wait for the weather to pass and hole up. So they go into the lodge. They forage for firewood. They bust out their one bottle.
This is
of wine.
Actually one of my favorite parts of the movie is them just exploring the lodge, just
an empty
walking
lodge.
Around. You can see their breath. It's so cold, and it was because this was a working lodge, but it was on the off season that they filmed in there, and there was no heat.
Yeah,
so that
you
is
you can see
real.
Their breath in the lodge, and just seeing the empty chairs facing the windows.
That's one of my favorite.
It's totally vacated. You see, just the cool rugs like laying about, and then the chairs facing the
windows.
It's
one of my favorite settings is that room.
Yeah.
The chairs, they're different. Like there's like two of the same, two of another same, one different.
Yeah.
It's so authentic, and the emptiness, those rugs, and then just walking
the
around
charm,
the place.
The
and,
wood paneling.
And you find
the
out
lodgeness
that no one
of it all.
Checked in 5 years. 5 years was the last time anyone checked in. We find this out. And then Jenny even says, well, why is it warm in here? Which it isn't warm in there, but maybe it is in different parts.
Well, I would say relatively warm. You know, like you can still have Mike, like when we lived in Michigan and you would set the thermostat on 55 degrees. And then I would come home and I would be like, oh, my, it is quite chilly in our home, and you'd be like, I don't know what you're talking about. I'd be like, yeah, I can see my breath in
it
some
happens.
Parts of this place, but Mike, you love that 55 thermostat.
It's true, but I love when they're walking around. I love Jenny, you know, going up to that room with it has a hanger on the knob, and it's the wind is banging it, and she walks in.
Oh,
the
a
wind,
coat hanger.
And the wind's open, the window's open, and it's blustering in.
Yeah.
But that's when we get the first glimpse of the Ghost Keeper. We just see her eye peeking in from some door.
Jenny.
And the whispers of, Jenny, Jenny, Jenny.
And, you know, I would say certainly not a less terrifying woman, but she does remind me of the Ma from Goonies.
Oh,
in
her
I can own
see
way.
That.
You know, I always thought that was a charming and terrifying character and well cast. So, yes, that.
But that seems great. And you can tell Jenny senses someone's presence in the lodge.
And, you know, something that we didn't mention is at the start of the film, there is a brief blurb about an explanation of a...
The Wendigo.
Yeah, Wendigo or Wendigo, whichever.
Yeah, the Wendigo, the legend of a flesh-eating monster, the Wendigo. Yes. So that is going to all...
So it's always hot on your mind because I think the way that legend plays out is so strange in this film.
Yeah, it's certainly not. There's other movies about that legend. This one, it's in the background in a way.
Well, I mean, I guess I should have waited to even bring it up because we're kind of not at a place where we would discuss it. So maybe I prior to recording this, I read and didn't have a chance to see how in depth it was that the production making this film started running low on money and they had to abandon many portions of the script that would involve the Wendigo, that would involve the monster that we later see. And that makes a lot of sense in terms of their lack of presence and probably the reason that people would accuse this film of being slow. But I honestly think it makes it more interesting provocative because
I totally agree.
Now we're framing ourselves more against the malice and violence of humans and human madness.
Yep.
And it's like the monster is incidental and has kind of taken the brunt of everybody, but truly the humans are the ones that are truly the source of the evil in the film the violence in the film, not necessarily the monster.
I totally agree. I think there's this overriding supernatural feel to it.
Yeah.
But it never super gets explained. It doesn't even really get explained why there's a Wendigo in the and exactly where it is in the lodge. I mean, you see it briefly and you see it in this ice igloo room.
Yeah.
But you don't even really know exactly where it is. And so Tara, I totally agree with you. I appreciate that it is not even, it's not focused on. It's in the background.
Because it's going to be, like you see that and you think it's going to be like, what is the Snow Beast? What's the one with the friggin' abominable snowman?
Shriek of the Mutilated.
Shriek of the Mutilated. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Snow Beast? Oh my God.
Winter Beast, that's a great one. I've been wanting to rewatch.
Winter Beast too. Yeah. But like Shriek of the Mutilated, you think it's going to be
like a
Wendigo clomping around, picking people off, like bloody footprints, shrieking, like all kinds of stuff. It's not that.
Yeah.
It's not that at all. And maybe that particular teaser at the beginning is why, you know, somebody would say, oh, it's slow, because it's not a violent supernatural monster film. It's more of a violent madness film.
Yes.
An isolation.
Yes.
And
I think that's why people compare it to The Shining, right?
Yes.
You know, because it has that. But I don't really necessarily, I mean, other than it's winter and it's isolated.
I mean, it has a lot of the same themes. Yeah. Like, I would say it has themes in terms of, like, ESP and madness and violence and chopping people and snow, but tons of the same themes, but the approach and the vibe are so incredibly different because it's not some exploitative film just showing the devolving sanity of one person and having them like act out in a frenzy. It's more of the slow burn in the terms of how we see reality. You know, it's like it turns it kind of on the viewer, like you didn't notice any of these things happening. You didn't understand what was in front of you. And then it's like a moment clicks in the end and you're like, oh, that's the ghost keeper that's referenced.
Right.
I think everything kind of comes together. So it's more subtle.
Yeah, I agree. Less subtle is the scene by the fireplace where Chrissy explains when she was younger, her fantasy was to be a hooker and how she had a substitute teacher pay.
What a darling.
What a darling. I mean, hey, you know what I'm thinking? Look, we got the recipe for an angel's triangle in this lodge. You know, I don't know why that didn't get capitalized on. And in another movie that we would have covered, it probably would happen.
look, Mike, in another movie, it would have been a different nature of a film, right? Especially if this were more of a slasher, they would have all banged and then gotten picked off, right? They would have banged and stabbed. But however, you know, the thing about the Angels Triangle is you want three people who want to participate.
Well, absolutely.
And in
Jenny
this
wasn't,
film,
it wasn't happening.
You got two people that want to participate, too. She is unimpressed by this tale. But I do appreciate Chrissy's tale because, again, it does have that psychological thing where we're building the characters and we have the innocence of Jenny. And then you see these other two who then you start to question, like, what's the guy's name again? I was
Marty. Marty.
You think Marty and Chrissy, like, did Marty and Chrissy plan this? Were they trying?
It feels like they kind of
like,
did.
Were they at the lodge? And, like, what would prevent them in a lodge in a hotel from, like, banging there? But were they trying to get alone to see if Jenny would do this? Were they trying to, like, sneak off together and have a tryst and ditch Jenny? Maybe ditch her over in the woods?
Yeah.
But, like, you know, her telling a tale of her sexual awakening, sexual naughtiness, something spicy to just titillate and arouse her audience. It's awesome and it's very human and it makes you like Chrissy.
I mean, look, I don't hate Chrissy.
I don't hate Chrissy. I hate Marty.
Yeah.
Marty's a prick.
I'm not a fan
I think
of
he's
Marty.
Dreary. I think he's boring. I don't like his attitude. I don't like the fact that he doesn't know how to fix a ski-doo.
Yeah. And thought he could just.
I don't like how whiny he is. I don't like how fast he caves.
Yeah.
Marty just. No,
kind
no,
of a puss.
Kind of a puss, yeah. They could do without. The ladies could have just ditched the drip, you know what I mean, and gone on with whatever. So. But then we get that amazing, again, that psychological back and forth of revealing that Jenny's mother was mad and her ultimate fear is being mad. And then they're all going to sleep together for a night. They meet the lady who's in charge of the lodge. She brings them
Tara,
around.
I was going to say, you really like mowed over that because the way we meet her is actually, as many times we've seen this, I did jump at when the ghost keeper jumps out at Marty. And tackles
Marty.
Yeah,
Marty's over in the kitchen with like a can of peaches or something.
He's looking for a wine cellar.
Oh, yeah.
Because they are out of their one bottle of wine
one
between three
wine.
People. I mean, guys, come on. One bottle of wine for three people. Let's get serious.
I know. That's what I'm saying. It's like they're acting awful giggly. One bottle of wine. Oh, we each get one hefty glass. Not even
hefty. Hey, you guys, we're having a party. I brought a six pack. Oh, okay, guy.
Okay, great. Thank you for that.
He's going to look for more alcohol, and then he gets surprise tackled by the ghost keeper. And this is now it is all going to.
Yeah, they just get 250 mils. Yeah, I mean, I guess that's an airplane
But again,
model.
I love the scene where they're walking when she's showing them to their rooms and with the lamps, and it's only lit by lamp. And it's great and dark. And
everybody's
the,
carrying the oil lamps. And it looks fantastic.
These are some
and
of my favorite parts of the movie.
Chrissy decides to take a bath. So she
a
goes.
Sexy bath.
And so she goes into
Light
the bathroom
candles.
Where she's already been warned there's not much hot water. And my.
She uses it all, apparently.
That's what I'm saying is like, if somebody's like, there's not much hot water.
Well, I'm gonna
my
up.
Reaction's not like, I'm going to go to this giant clawfoot
she's
bathtub
a little, look,
and take
she's
a tub.
She's a little selfish, you know.
Yeah, well. Yeah, that's true. I think we've proved that.
She lights the candles, and I mean, look, Marty.
Bunch of candles.
You know, Marty's thinking about getting in there.
Yeah, well, he doesn't have a chance to because.
Why is that, Tara?
We are introduced to, I mean, how many people are in this total? Six.
Yes.
Yeah.
Eight. In if you want to get completely
the shopkeeper.
Total. Eight. The shopkeeper, the three, Marty, Jenny, and Chrissy. The ghost keeper, ghost keeper's son Danny,
and then
the Wendigo, and the snowshoes guy near the end. So
no, the snowshoes guy is the shopkeeper.
No, I don't think it is. No, it's not.
Okay.
So eight in total.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I don't remember.
So yeah, so very minimal, right? You know, cast. But Marty's thinking about getting in that bathtub, but. Not going to do it, T, because the son has his way. We finally meet the son that the ghost keeper had mentioned when she was explaining.
And my boy. I live here with my boy.
It's so great that you just see his face, and then he just pushes her head in the tub and then pulls her out. You think she's dead, but because he walks her down naked down to the igloo room where we do meet the Wendigo, and she is barely still alive up until she gets her throat slit and fed to the Wendigo.
She does. She gets chopped up into little bits. Now, I'm a naysayer, but I do think that the storekeeper is the snowshoes man because there are only 7 people listed in the cast.
Okay.
You know what? Not that I'm trying to be a naysayer, but I thought I recognized the guy. I thought the snowshoe guy, the whole time, I thought he was like, oh man, these idiots, they got lost on their stupid ski-doos. Now I have to go get them out of a pickle. So I assume he packed up and he came out to find them. And I could have sworn it's the same guy. It's this guy.
See?
Les Kimber.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, that's him.
Wait, but is that the shop guy?
Yes.
Look, see,
as, storekeeper.
As I disclaimered earlier, any new listeners, this is the kind of
you,
stuff
like,
you're going to get.
I doubted myself, and then I was like, no, wait. You know,
you're right.
I
watched it twice this week.
I might be dude blind, okay?
Yes.
I may not be able to remember dudes' faces on occasion. However, that one I clocked.
I watched
He's
it
distinctive
twice
enough.
This week, and I didn't clock
No,
that.
It was
Look
the nice shopkeeper
me.
Was like, these idiot kids like got themselves into trouble. I never saw these nitwits and these dummies. They couldn't handle themselves, Look, so he had to come out and find them. And he had the supplies because he owns the shop.
I told you, you want the scientific, in-depth discussion of stuff, you need to go somewhere else. This is the kind of stuff you're getting
I did
over
the
here.
Math. They got 250 milliliters each of wine because it's a 750 mil bottle. And that shopkeeper is the snowshoes dude. Look, we are conducting science in these parts.
Also, a quick interjection for any of our new listeners. We are going to spoil things. We don't really believe in the spoiler alert. I don't care about spoilers. In fact, I generally like having a movie spoiled.
Then you can
I don't
just kind of sit back and relax.
It. If you haven't seen this movie and you're listening, you're not going to remember.
No.
Now, that doesn't mean, you know, we talk about a giallo. We might not spoil a giallo because sometimes the twist is fun. Sleepaway
yeah.
Camp, you know, you don't want to spoil that for someone who's never seen it. There's certain
movies. Yeah, I was
going to
say Sleepaway Camp, we still don't spoil it.
There's certain movies, but overall, I just don't care about a spoiler. I don't care about it.
Yeah, and you know, like, I love Demons as a film because I find it relaxing to watch because I know everybody's going to die. You know, and it's just like there is something that you can just, like, sit back and watch it happen. It's fine.
I have officially disclaimed enough for any of our new people. So enough out of me, Tara. Let's get back to Ghost Keeper. So, yes, Chrissy is dead. She has been fed to the Wendigo. But again, like you said, we don't see it. We see her throat get slit and we see the Wendigo pull her away. But that's it.
And then we
see
a bunch
of
chopping. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah, which is great.
But we see. So the you know, we're calling it the Wendigo. But again, the ghost keeper by the fireside does explain that the Wendigo being a giant. There's legend of a giant in these parts. Or maybe they read it in a book.
Oh, yeah. Right.
They read
it
in a book that was sitting out and bookmarked.
Jenny does that later in the movie.
There's
yes.
a legend of a giant in these parts, and it's generally kept by women. And it's a man-eating giant. And so we do have that in our heads through the film. And, you know, it started with the Wendigo blurb at the beginning. Correct. So that's what we associate with this giant. But what's so strange about it is when we see the frames, it's kind of like all the shots of this igloo, like they're going downstairs as though they're going into a cellar.
Yeah.
And then we have a glowing wall of ice, like it's an igloo that was built
so
and
cool.
It looks amazing.
Yeah.
And then a locked door and the glowing wall of ice. And inside is this. The creature doesn't look deadly. It's kind of helpless and kind of standing there. And it looks like it has either like wearing someone else's face
yeah,
as their
it's
skin.
Very strange looking.
Or it's blind because it never quite moves. It never lurches. It never chases. Like if the door is unlocked, we don't see anybody being chased by this giant. It's kind of standing there like helplessly and mournfully.
Yeah, and it's the clearest we've ever seen him on this great restoration.
And so when Jenny, her throat is slit, then we see things Chrissy, her throat is slit and she's being chopped up probably, you know, with an axe and they're down by the skull. We just assume that she's being fed to this giant helpless thing that makes sounds like, however, you know, it's very passive, but the active, violent, scary person is actually the Ghost Keeper's son.
Yeah, and I will like to note at this point the great music, the great soundtrack to this movie. Paul Zaza, who also did My Bloody Valentine, I believe Prom Night as well, other Canadian movies. And it just has a great eerie quality. This would be another one I would love a CD of the soundtrack. It's just got that great atmosphere. Very ambient, dark ambient feeling, but with, you know, strings. Maybe it's synth strings, you know, I don't know at that point. Probably not in 81, but...
It's probably
more, you know, actually done. But it has great atmosphere, the sound. So it really all adds up together in such a perfect way.
Yeah, it's again, just suspenseful. So we see, you know, her body being fed, and then everybody just kind of wonders where she went. Her ski-doo, snow-doo, whatever it is, disappears. Marty and Jenny are left looking for her, wondering where she's gone.
His mobile has been tampered with.
He's starting to kind of lose it, wondering where she's gone. And it does make you think that he was plotting with her to, like, go off and have a little affair. Because when the Ghost Keeper says that she left early in the morning, he's like, oh, she would never do that. She's going to leave me.
He's like, didn't see her leave.
We haven't banged yet. I haven't seen her leave. She's not going to leave. Not going to leave me. So then he goes out to start his motor, and it won't start. And he sees, like, a spark plug or something with a cord missing. And then he's just rifling around maddeningly. And he doesn't know how to fix it anyway. Even if he had the parts to fix it, he wouldn't know how to fix it.
But this is where Jenny is given a cup of tea that we soon find out is not just any old cup of tea. Because she goes and sits in that room with the chairs staring out into the snow. And all of a sudden everything starts to get blurry. And this looks really great.
Yeah.
And everything starts to move and get blurry. And it really does have that sensation of, like, me discussing going under for my tooth surgery. Mm-hmm. It really felt that's what it felt like. Everything was moving and waving and going blurry. And then you see the Ghost Keeper and her son in the doorway, and it's all blurry, and it's so creepy because they're just standing still watching her. Mm-hmm. And all you see is the blurriness. You never see it clear. And you see it from Jenny's perspective, and then she just passes out, and then they come and drag her away, but it's always through this blurry lens. It's so creepy.
And then their lair, like all the shots of like their place, you're like, is she in a different cabin? Like, where is she?
It seems like she is.
Yeah, there's a lot more like barn wood and, you know, darkness and oil lamps.
But you see it separately later in the movie. Yeah. So it is really cool.
I'm jealous of that tea. Wouldn't that be nice to have at night? We could, like, sip some tea in bed and just kind of, like...
I mean, look, I get why Michael Jackson loved that stuff. Because, man, some nights... I'll say, been sleeping pretty good, though, recently. But...
Wonder why. What's the difference, Mike?
Yeah. I don't know. What?
You know what? I've had some nights where it takes me a long time to fall asleep. I wonder why that is.
I don't know. You know what? Who can tell?
There's literally no way of knowing why for the last month that has happened. I guess we'll just sit here and wonder.
Maybe
I'll go to bed early after we watch the Royal Rumble.
Wonder away.
Go to bed nice and early.
So now, you know, things are getting, you know, more and more sinister. And Marty does go look in this little shed. He does see the bloody stump where someone had been chopped up.
But no, he looked up and there's like a deer, a white
tail.
Guess
it was just a deer.
Guess that's it. Certainly wasn't a pretty lady with a lot of cool tails. I mean, that would be a great show. Like, she should tell all those. I would go watch. I would go sit by a fireside and drink wine and listen to Chrissy tell me stories like that. Is that a thing? Can we do that? I don't need to watch a burlesque show.
It's called the Underground Espionage Podcast, Tara, and we are the ones providing these stories.
Oh, I mean, are we going to start telling personal tales?
Michael,
titillate me. Let's go. Give me one. Fire. Shoot. Come on. We're all sitting here flaccid. We're ready to, you know, erect a stone.
We'll save that for the Summer Lovers episode. Tara, where are we in the notes? I took these notes, actually, but I like when you read
these new notes. You took them now?
I took them. Those are the notes I took while we were watching.
Oh, I took those notes. Oh, okay.
But you're the one looking at them. So
I kind of looked at them, but I wasn't reading them. It was more of a gesture, like, you know, that's something to keep me, like, and activities doing something. It was more of a fidgeting move. I was reading something like stabs him and chases up top, pushes him off.
That chase scene is incredible. So at one point, Jenny's walking around, does come upon the igloo room with the Wendigo, freaks out, and then the son.
Well, she unlocked, because that's the thing though. So again, so we leave with Marty being a crazy dude. Trying to figure out how to fix the Ski-Doo, even though he knows he'll never do it. He's starting to go a little mad, right? He's starting to get stir crazy. He's starting to understand the how he should be truly desperate at this point. And Jenny has been drugged and wakes up in this cozier but more sinister looking place. And she finds her way into the area with the igloo. And in the lock, in the door, the key's just there. Because, again, who's going to unlock it? They just leave the lock in the door, but the key's in it. So she opens it and sees him. And when she closes the door again, she sees the son, who then chases her, grabs a chainsaw. He does quickly drop the chainsaw. So they go on an amazing chase through the empty hotel
room. So great. I love
the
chase scene, yeah.
Which is so suspenseful, because you think, oh, they're not going to kill Jenny, but when he's chasing her, you're like, oh, no, this man is definitely going to try to kill her. So, you know, the ghost keeper kept calling her one smart cookie. You're one smart cookie.
Hey,
you're a tough cookie. Like, you girly, you know how to survive. Like, you're going to be here. It's like, it's almost like, you know, the ghost keeper is the what's that thing? The sharpening rod, and Jenny is the knife.
Right.
And the ghost keeper is preparing her for what lies ahead in terms of her existence. And so Jenny goes up out onto a balcony on the roof, and as the violent, murderous son pops his head out, she smashes the door into him, and he falls onto a pointy fence, he's stabbed in the gut. Isn't it crazy when you see those fences with the points? Sometimes I'm like, how are those legal? And then also, it's like this thing in me that's like, don't impale yourself. And it's like, I don't know how I would impale myself, but I have this urge to like tell myself not to.
Since seeing from the very first time I saw this movie, that's the only thing I think about when I see those fences. I think about Ghost Keeper and I think about him falling.
Oh, I've always thought that. When you see those like wrought iron fences with the points at the top, even like a regular, you know, the
Well, I guess
the
part
regular
of it is a way to keep
people
from climbing it.
Yeah, but you climb them anyway. And it's like, slip when you're climbing, you're not going to impale yourself. You're just going to be mildly uncomfortable. But something in me is like, yeah, you could do that.
Do you know one time I climbed a fence? I can't remember if I climbed in it or I think it was, climbing out of it. I was in a like public park in Barcelona late at night, and it closed when we were in there. And I climbed like a crazy fence.
Oh,
I just
you did.
When you just said that,
that's
I remember
really
that.
Funny. When you were on tour,
yeah.
So you're on tour in Barcelona. You get stuck in a park and you had to climb a crazy fence. I don't pick like I would say out of the two of us, if one of us is going to climb something crazy, it's going to be me. You
yeah,
don't
it's
like
not,
heights,
not, but it was we were literally stuck.
Yeah, you had no choice. Like, it's stay all night in the park or climb the damn.
That's
fence.
Funny. I have
really
not thought
funny.
Of that till this second.
Wow. How'd you do?
I mean, I'm
if
here.
I was it pointy?
I'm not still.
Was
not,
it pointy?
I didn't get
You're not
in
that
it.
Park. Was it pointy?
I don't remember.
I've definitely climbed a fence with a pointy top and gotten my pants stuck and then fell and then my pants were stuck on the fence like a cartoon.
Yeah.
I have done that for sure.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. But I do think of that when I see these fences. And we see the ghost keeper sees this happen and doesn't really react.
No.
She doesn't really freak out. Later, she sort of does, but it's sort of like this was all supposed to happen.
Yeah, the ghost keeper has really good impulse control. She's very calculating.
Marty really starts losing it at this point.
Yeah.
He's like, you killed her. And he's not going to help her.
No, he's like, you killed him.
Guess what, T?
You killed him. Everybody's going to know.
Hey, guess
Everybody's going to know because he's a lawyer.
If you kill somebody, I'm helping you. All right. I ain't gonna leave you. I ain't gonna ditch you. We're going down together.
I mean, I think that she had a pretty strong case for self-defense in that situation. So I would say she shouldn't worry.
Either way, Tara, I'm with you all the way.
Thank you so much. You're not gonna freak out and then just take off on your own through a snowdrift that's like
grease on my face and then walk through the snow, and then when you come follow me, push you down.
This ending of the film, like, okay, so now we're getting to the fever pitch. You know, we have the ghost keeper's son has been killed. We do see kind of off in the distance that somebody's snowshoeing their way out, the concerned shopkeeper. Which I never questioned ever until you asked me. And then so Marty has painted his face with oil from the garage and is just losing it. You know, he's losing his mind. He can't cope here because he, as he points out himself, you know, what are all of his fancy college books and long words getting him now? Nothing. He's a lawyer. He has a degree, but they won't help him fix his ski-doo, and they won't get him out of this situation. So his world is collapsing upon him. He's horrified by the violence, the murder, the disappearance of this person he wanted to fuck, who seemed like a sure thing, seemed like a fun time. All of these things have been taken away from him. His civility stripped. He goes off into the climbing, mounting, drifting snow. And Jenny is trying to stop him because she is not mad yet. And as she's chasing him, he just keeps pushing her down. As she's trying to stop him and hug him, he keeps grabbing her and like holding her face and pushing her hair back and pushing her head. He keeps holding her close to him and pulling her head back with her hair.
I always think it's stuff like so that is more uncomfortable than like getting stabbed. Is the like nasty pushing.
Every time she stands up, he pushes her down. Yeah. So she's trying to chase him, and he keeps pushing her down.
Snow, believe me, we remember what it's like wading through snow like that.
Yeah,
it's awful. Yeah, it's awful as it is. Someone pushing you down.
We lived in Michigan for over a decade. Like, we've done our time in the
snow.
You grew up in Chicago. You were with me when the wind of Chicago was blowing so coldly. I don't know a better word for it. So it was so cold that my contacts froze in my eyes.
It was the first time I brought you to Chicago?
I went to Chicago. We're over there in the old Windy City. Yes, I know that's not why they call it windy. You know what I mean? We all know that. You don't have to say it, but it's fucking cold and windy. Got a lake effect. The wind's blowing right in my eyes. It's like negative 10. My contacts freeze. They pop out, and I am blind. It is why I now carry backup contacts forever.
Good.
Fuckers.
God, well, I'm glad I did
it. Shit. That was some, but you didn't say you blind bitch and then push me down in the snow and kind of walk away from me while I'm groping towards you. And I'm like, don't leave me, Mike. No, stop. Just, like, think twice. Oh, and you just push me down and you kind of like yank my head back until I can't look at you and like pull my hair disrespectfully.
That's
going to
be
that
for later after we record this episode.
You didn't do that. Oh, sorry. God, disrespectfully. Well, darling, I have a ponytail. You can't hurt me. I thought twice. So, you know, we have this scene and it's just so intense because he's insistent upon going out into the treacherous Canadian wilderness out in the snow. And we all know he's done for, right? He's done for. He has no ski-doo. He has no supplies. He doesn't even have a bottle of wine. This kid is toast. And Jenny knows it, but she's indefatigable and keeps getting pushed down. And Mr. Snowshoes makes his approach to the cabin. Jenny remembers that there's a gun. Jenny becomes intent on going back and getting the gun. So Jenny goes to find the shotgun that she had seen exist. And our valiant shopkeeper makes his way there and is quickly cut short.
Quickly dealt with.
By the ghost keeper, who again is treacherous and knows how to hide her weapons and her intent.
The final standoff between Jenny and the ghost keeper is great in the hallway where Jenny has the shotgun and the ghost keeper has the knife behind her back. And she's explaining, she's like, you don't want to go crazy like your mother.
You don't want to be crazy like your mother.
You know who your mother is.
That gun hasn't been used for years, girl. You know it doesn't work. It never worked. You know it doesn't work. You don't want that. You're going to go, come to me, Jenny. Come to me. And she's holding a knife behind her back. And guess what?
She goes, I never hurt you. And she lunges.
I never hurt you. Yes.
And it's established that the Ghost Keeper is saying that she is Jenny's mother at this point. And I even sort of question that. I mean,
I think she was like just being spiritually her mother.
That's what I think. I think it's more of a supernatural thing.
Yeah.
But I guess it could be literal. I've always taken it as a supernatural thing. And even just supernaturally knowing her name when she got there, like Jenny. I always thought of it less as a literal thing.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, it could be literal.
I mean, it
I
could
guess.
Be literally her mother and she's there, but then Jenny didn't recognize her. But she was eavesdropping on all the conversations that occurred.
I think of it more as a supernatural thing. But of course, what that does is make it so that Jenny is now the Ghost Keeper.
And Jenny is, you know, the Ghost Keeper had said, you know, she couldn't go on forever and she would be the next wave. And now Jenny is speaking to herself in third person. To Jenny. Jenny is speaking to Jenny.
You should have been nicer to Jenny.
You should have been nicer to Jenny.
Jenny will
it's
take
over,
care of
isn't
you.
It? You'll be fine. I'll look after you. You know I will.
Yeah,
you'll
to
see
the Wendigo.
Jenny.
She goes down to the Wendigo and says, you know,
Jenny will take care of you.
Yeah, it's great. And it ends with her sitting by the, you know, in the chair looking out, drinking tea.
Yeah, she opened the door of the igloo and looked in upon her new child. And he's like, ah. She just closes the door. Again, like having that, you know, terrifying monster giant and having it wreak no havoc, only the human beings, you know, in the scene doing it. I thought it was a nice touch, and maybe that wasn't the original intent in the script. Maybe the monster was going to go out and run amok and do some things. There's not a bunch of people to pick off.
I think it's great that
I love the way it shook down.
Way more subtle. And look, this week's watch has just even more solidified this as being one of our absolute favorite movies.
And it is that type of thing that reminds you, although you may think there are monsters and other things that you need to fight, ultimately your own psychological battles are the biggest battles that you need to overcome.
Absolutely they are. Absolutely. And it's a movie like this that will put you in that frame of mind and that state of mind. And the atmosphere alone that just drips off the screen will put you in that space.
In the Deer Lodge.
Same with, like, just, you know, mention that Christian Olsen tape. It's a similar thing that puts you in that space. And it's a great matchup.
It's candle burning season.
It certainly is. Look, this Ghost Keeper Blu-ray is just absolutely mandatory. Excited to, like I said, watch with the Hysteria commentary. But, you know, sometimes you won't want to, you don't want to repeat.
Yeah, I don't want to ape what they said.
Yeah. Or even if you don't mean to, it's just in your head,
exactly.
You know? So, always like to limit too much listening about something that we're about to talk about just for that reason alone.
Yes.
And then it's funny when you do then listen and you do end up saying similar things.
Gosh, darn it. Yeah.
Well, no, not even that's right. I think it's
just, but maybe it'll be totally different. Well, we're going to find out, you know? And I do love the cover of this
disc.
So it's fantastic.
You know, the cover of the Code Red DVD, it's funny because I was messaging with someone this week and I sent them the cover of this and they sent me back their, you know, they had the Code Red. And, you know, there is something nostalgic about it because it's the Deer Lodge, but then it's like a skull that has nothing to do really with anything that superimposed over it. And there's just something I like thinking about the Code Red, you know, release of it. So it's nostalgic. But this cover is so great with the white with the lodge and then a drawn skull over it. And
yeah,
then just that
it makes me
want to
draw.
It is
by candlelight.
Yeah. It's actually the reversed cover. I think the cover that's when you pick it up has a new drawn cover of the characters. But then when you reverse it, it's got one of the, I believe this is one of the VHS covers. I believe it is.
Well, I like it so much. We're using that one in the pick.
Always reverse it to the classic poster cover or the classic VHS cover if that is an option in a Blu-ray release. That is always what we do. But hey, Ghost Keeper, one of the best, and one of the best for this time of year for our snowed in friends, our snow covered friends out there throughout the U.S. and probably other really cold places out there.
Enjoy the snow before it gets too dirty.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I was just checking, looking back at past episodes, and next week will be our 1 year anniversary.
That's crazy.
Of Underground Espionage. We kicked off Underground Espionage with Pretty Peaches, one of our favorite of the golden era porns. Tara, I thought we would do a 1 year anniversary with another favorite porn film of the golden era. Tara, how about for next week's episode we do Ginger Lynn and Amber Lynn in Trashy Lady? What do you say, Tara?
Oh, yeah.
What?
That is a very high jerk off value.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Wow. And so Ginger Lynn. Yeah, I was going to say we need to do something very sleazy.
It is.
Oh, my goodness. I have so many images in my mind. This is not going to help my fashion choices in the coming weeks, sir.
It is absolutely going to help your fashion choices. Well, thank you for listening. Thank you for the support. It's been a fun ride thus far. 1 year anniversary next week with Trashy Lady. In the meantime, watch Ghost Keeper. We'll talk to you next week.